On a mission from Dog, Walking Adventures in Africa, by Lorraine Chittock, read by the author. Introduction.
You're going to have to be pretty careful when you move to Kenya.
I'd been cautioned like a little girl.
Africa is a dangerous place.
Yes, I know. I would reply to men friends who gave the dire warnings, rarely women who seemed less worried and more elated for me. Don't forget, I have been living in Egypt for 7 years.
Ah, yes. But where you're going is different. Kenya is Black Africa, and Black Africa is another world.
I was in Senegal. That's Black Africa.
Yes, that's true. But that's West Africa.
I've been to the Sudan, too. And I did spend 6 weeks traveling by camel across the Libyan desert.
Maybe so, but where you're going is like nowhere you've ever been. There's a reason they call the capital of Kenya Nairobi.
Despite my initial confidence, by the time I landed at Jomo Kenyatta Airport, the naysayers had done their work. I was terrified of the massive onslaught of rapists, murderers, and thieves who awaited my arrival. The house chosen by the school for my husband and myself was in Karen, on the outskirts of Nairobi, named after Baroness Karen Blixen, who penned Out of Africa. We occupied one of three houses on 6 rolling, park-like acres, concealed from one another's view and the sky by tall trees. The area seemed permanently enveloped in a fog which didn't lift until late afternoon, if at all. It was dark. Giza sana, very dark, were my first Kiswahili words. During my years in Egypt, I longed to be removed from Cairo's noisy streets and monotonous tan buildings. Once in Karen, I sat enveloped in green foliage for as far as the eye could see, only occasionally seeing a car navigating its way from a hidden house down a long driveway. Mentally, I superimposed Cairo's chaos onto the pristine landscape, hoping to recapture what I'd once loathed. I yearned for life. Black Africans walked along Nandi Road, a long potholed track to and from work, employed behind the high hedges as housekeepers, gardeners, and cooks for the largely white population. Men who were askaris, or security guards, hung out at the nearby kiosks during daylight hours. Then, from 6 at night till 6 in the morning, they made sure the populace was protected behind their barred windows and doors. There was a forest nearby where baboons and Sykes monkeys lived. I longed to experience primates outside a television box where they'd been held captive since I was a child. But I was told men, white men, had been mugged while jogging in the forest, wedding bands forced from their fingers. This was my introduction to Nairobi. Travel and wildlife were two of my passions, and I was desperate to stray further afield. I didn't dare. Asphyxiated by fear, my adventuresome nature came to a grinding halt. My home became my tomb. I was quickly going berserk, though certainly not quietly, according to my husband, inside our white-painted house in the white neighborhood, struggling to hold off until noon before drinking my first beer of the day. Then, without warning, and after 6 months of self-imposed isolation, I snapped. It was 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I wrenched myself away from the computer, my source of companionship from the time my husband left for work at 7 until arriving home before dusk. In the kitchen, instead of grabbing a second bottle of beer, I went directly to the black wrought-iron back door and swung it open. The sun had only just emerged from behind the bombax tree, whose 1-inch thorns lay half-hidden in the grass. Hesitating only momentarily, I pulled the wooden door shut behind me, turned the lock, secured the outer metal portal with 2 padlocks, stuffed the keys in my shorts pocket, and began walking down the dirt driveway. I strode quickly along the length of Nandy Road, across Miatoni, and up the other side, where the road bent to the right to continue to other white-occupied homes. I did the unthinkable. I walked straight into the forest where black Africans were heading. Stumbling down a hill lined by eucalyptus and stray bits of garbage, I struggled up an even steeper trail on the other side. People with skin tones greatly darker than my own either ignored the only white person on the commuter path, or greeted me by saying, "Jumbo." My voice replied cheerily. My feet kept their brisk pace. I began walking a few times a week, then every day. With my neighbor's blessings, their 2 dogs began accompanying me. Rico, a lovely animal with whom I connected intensely, was my lifeline. The house I still hated, but walking with Rico, the only dog I'd ever loved, made it bearable. For the first time in far too long, my late afternoons became filled with moments of laughter and fun which carried me throughout the day. Then one morning, after making my groggy way to the kitchen to prepare tea, I found a note, hastily scribbled, on the back door. "Please do not walk our dogs any more. They need to stay at their own home." I was devastated, though I'd known our time together was limited. At my insistence, John and I had already begun the search for new accommodation.